Today is February 2nd, 2023, and we are interviewing at the Ashland City Library Gary K. Allison, who was born March 2nd, 1952. The interview is being done by Kara Vandery through the Ashland City Library with the Humanities Kansas in conjunction with the National Endowment for the Arts Big Read Project. Gary, you served in the Vietnam War with what branch of service?
Marine Corps.
What was your rank when you left?
Corporal, E4.
What does E4 stand for?
Enlisted Man 4.
Okay. And where did you serve?
I served all over Southeast Asia, Barstow, California, Okinawa, Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. Barstow, California was my last duty station, and that was it.
Okay. How many years did you serve?
2 years.
Okay. Were you drafted or did you enlist?
Enlist.
When was this?
March 19th, 1972.
What led you to enlist?
Fear. I didn't want to go in the Army because Walter Cronkite would state, and he was every evening, he would come on Channel 6 and give a rundown on the Vietnam War, talk about all the individuals that got shot, everything like this, and I didn't want to be listed that way. Either do something different with me. And when I got scared bad enough, I just went ahead and went into where I lived, a mile north of the Harper Ranch headquarters and against Day Creek. And I went in there and called the recruiter out of Dodge City and explained to him what the situation was and that we were going to be working cattle that afternoon. And he said, "Well, can I bother you?" I said, "Yeah, you'd be fine." And he said, "Okay, we'll be down there." I said, "Okay, we'll be back there working cattle." And he showed up back behind there. And Jim Harper told us to go ahead and get in a bunkhouse, which is worked as an office at that time. And we went in there and they explained all the good stuff about the Marine Corps and all the bad stuff about the Marine Corps and everything like this. And I signed up for 2 years. And that's the biggest thing that drew me to the Marine Corps was the fact that I was going to get drafted anyway, which is a 2-year deal. So I went 2 years Marine Corps because I thought I'd be just in a better situation.
Was it?
That's a good question. I don't know. I guess it was.
Where were you living? And you were 21 years old when
I was 20 years old at that time.
Okay.
And I just decided I was getting old enough that I'd better do something if I was going to do anything.
Were you still living with your parents?
No, I hadn't lived with them for a couple of years.
Okay. So why did you choose the Marines rather than Air Force or Navy or something like that?
They had a history that stuck in my mind a little better than what the Army did or the Navy or Air Force. Mm-hmm. I didn't really like to fly that well. Navy, I didn't get too wild about them because you get stuck out there in the ocean somewhere and you would be in a world of stuff. And So I didn't want to go get out in the water like that. And so naturally, the first thing they did when I got sent overseas, I was in a helicopter unit where you had to fly and station aboard the ship where you had to be out in that dadgum water. So it's kind of a payback.
You tried.
One of those deals.
Do you recall what your first days in the service were like?
They were like a living hell. We got to San Diego in the evening. Went out of the airport terminal. A sergeant was there and he picked us up, had us all get on a bus, and we rode over to the Marine Corps recruit base, and we fell out off of the deal on, he said, get off here and get out on those yellow footprints. Because when you pull up to the Marine Corps deal, you park the bus, and right here is our yellow footprints painted all over the ground. We got over each one of those set of footprints, and we stood there in that position until they ushered us in the room and had our hair cut off, and it was a whole different deal. They had hair clear down to their knees, and it was so funny. I could not believe it. Because Kenny and I had worked out at Syracuse for Young Cooper Cattle Company. We had a guy there that had just been out of the Navy for a little while, and he was always jerking his head to the side and getting his hair out of his eyes. And so we just set him down in the at the kitchen table, and I just said, relax, enjoy yourself, because while you're sitting there, we're going to cut your hair off. We're tired of you sitting there jerking your head one way or the other. And we just took a pair of horse clippers and gave him a buzz. And I could think of that all the time. I was standing there in line waiting to get my hair cut off that night. And we got out of the deal getting our hair cut off, and they put us in line and told us to go down through there and get new uniforms and everything like this. Utility jackets, there, all this stuff, new boots, shoes, the whole deal. Stick them in your duffel bag. Then you stood at attention and out in the deal, and they escorted us off to these small Quonset huts. And these Quonset huts were made for like 25 or 30 men, and there were like 120 of us. And so we got in those little huts and made our beds, and they informed us that those beds would be made Marine Corps way and the whole thing, and they showed us exactly how to do it, and they said, that's how you're going to do it the rest of the time you're in the Marine Corps. And that's the way we did it the rest of our time within the Marine Corps. It was embarrassing. But we got through that deal, I suppose it was about 3 o'clock in the morning when we finished crawling out in bed, getting some sleep. 4:10, they were in there waking us up, telling us to get out and get dressed and get out on the deck. And be out there in position of attention. And we got out there and got lined up and the whole deal. And they took us to breakfast. We had a very early breakfast. And then we, that was after we ran a 5 mile course. Just ran. And I hate to run like that. But it was a distance run, and that's the way we had to do it. And after we'd finished running that course, which was, I suppose, probably 6 o'clock, 6:15, something like that, we went over to the barracks, or to the chow hall, and they gave us each a metal plate, utensils, the whole darn deal. Told you how you had to hold them up like this and sidestep down through the line, and they'd put some food on there and everything like that. Get all that stuff, get over there and set your tray down and stand in their position of attention until they told you you could sit down, and sat down and you ate. Never said a word. Did exactly what they said to do, or they'd beat hell out of you.
Physically?
Yes. And, they did that many times. And it was like, they get mad at you. They just have the whole unit come up around you and do an about face and face outward. And the DI would have you right there. And he just beat the living hell out of you. And till he got his deal all worked off, and then he'd have about face, and you get back in line and go out and do it again. Go through and do whatever you were doing. And we did that for, boot camp was 13 weeks long. And it was like Army, that's what, 5-6 weeks. And the Marine Corps let you know that they were the boss. And we got through that deal. Went through that situation. They took us up, went us through the firing range and everything.
What kind of guns were you using?
M14s. M14s were what we were shooting in boot camp. Used 16s when we got to Vietnam. But
and the difference is a 16 holds more.
No, a 16 is a 5.56 millimeter outfit, and a 14 is a 6.72 millimeter outfit. Isn't near as large, and they work better on automatic and stuff like this.
Okay, more advanced.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Besides getting thumped on, do you have any other boot camp or training experiences that come to mind?
Oh yeah, when we got up there, it was up in ITR, and there were these outfits where you had to crawl underneath wire. They were shooting at you with a 50 caliber machine gun. You learned to keep your butt down.
Where they would shoot it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we were scared to death, but we weren't really scared. We were just very apprehensive about what we were doing. And we'd finally get crawled underneath that barbed wire and everything like that, and we'd be as close to the ground as you could find. We were going to try to stay alive as long as we could. They'd take us down. We'd run in the sand on the beach next to the water, and sometimes we'd be in the water, sometimes we'd be out of the water. You didn't really know. And it was interesting because they make you do things that you could never imagine you've ever been able to do. But it'd just be wild. Teach you different aspects of fighting and stuff like this. It's a good way to get your nose broke. It makes my glasses fit better because that way they don't slide straight down. I mean, there's a bump. There's a lump. They stop right there.
How did you get your nose broke?
I've caught fists in the face many times.
Okay. During training?
During training, usually in the bar, but that was just fighting and having fun.
Okay. So you're saying there were a few positive episodes?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You were telling me about playing ball for the lady who owned...
Oh, yes. We got out of boot camp after 13 weeks of that hell hole. And we got orders for Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, at Jacksonville, North Carolina. And we got there the first night, and we were supposed to check in the next morning. So we went down to find us a beer joint to go to that night while we was messing around, and just happened that we went into this one beer joint, and this gal that owned the place, she came up to us. We was all sitting over there having a beer. There's four of us. And she said, "Do you guys like to play softball?" Naturally, we did, just for the fun of it. And that lady said, I will give you all the beer you can drink for the amount of your time that you're here for school if you would play ball for my ball team." Okay. So every night when we get off from school, we'd come 5 o'clock, we'd take a shower and get everything done and get civvies on and head down there for the beer joint and sit in there and have a beer or two and go over there and play a ball game. Just have a world of fun. Oh, we had fun. I loved it down there. God darn. It was great. I hate the place now, but at the time we were there, it was great. We were there at the same time they had the North Carolina State Fair and everything like that. We went up to the State Fair, did everything that we had. And those guys, well, these old boys from Liberal, Gary Carpenter and Vance Freeman. Gary Carpenter didn't know how to do anything but fight. And come to find out, he was All-State fullback for Liberal High School when he was in high school. And he was about 5'6", 5'7", weighed... 240, 250. He was one stout individual. He was the honor man in my platoon when I was in boot camp. you know, these dress blues and everything like that, which they give you dress blues now, but they didn't then. It was interesting for an old farm kid.
Mm-hmm. Was it your first time to be out of Kansas?
Oh, well, yeah, for the most part. Because mm-hmm. I was raised on, I was born in Ashland, lived in Dodge City, Greensburg, Englewood, grew up on the Grove Ranch up northwest of Englewood, and learned how to break horses and work cattle and do all this stuff. Got 4-H and did everything like that, and just had a world of fun. Hated to leave there when we left there, but after 8 years we left and came over here and lived up north of town about 2.5 miles and mm-hmm. on my uncle's place, and lived in town here for a while. Then we moved up there. We didn't like it, living in town. It's no place to be.
Okay. Do you have any other boot camp training experiences you would like to talk about?
Not really. Okay.
You enjoyed it while you were there?
No. It was, when I said hell, I mean it was hell. It was hell on wheels. I mean, when I was in high school, I went out for all sports and everything like this. Got in stuff like that, and I enjoyed it. Boot camp, you're in worlds of physical labor. You're not playing games or anything. You're working for your life. And it's a whole different kind of a deal. But it's...
Do you remember any of your instructors specifically?
Oh, yes. We had... when we started out, we had a white guy that was a sergeant. We had him for a whole week or two. And we had the head guy was a staff sergeant, or a gunnery sergeant, Reeves, big black guy. And I had never worked around black people. Had Staff Sergeant Bilbo. He was a smaller type black guy. And Staff Sergeant Williams. But see, we had 120 guys. And when they said do this, they meant do this or get living hell beat out of you. And I think there were probably 75 or 80 of us that graduated when the end of the 13 weeks were up. And the rest of them had gone over the hill and tried to get on airplanes. 'Cause see, we were right next to the airbase or the airport in San Diego. I mean, get over the fence at night and try to hide yourself on these airplanes. And most of them were froze by the time they were found. And so they were...
30% of the people who started out?
Yeah. That's just part of it.
Wow.
No, it was not a good deal.
And a bunch of them died trying to escape.
Yes. A lot of them did. And it's unreal. And you'd have, well, like we had, like the Fat Man's Platoon. That was the overweight individuals that you could not believe had got tried to get in there. But these guys, they were singled out, and just that's how they were addressed, as fat men. Get your fat man over here, get in line. And then you wouldn't see him again until, usually you wouldn't see him again. Like we had one guy in my unit that graduated boot camp. He had been in boot camp for a solid year. A 13-week boot camp. And that's what, 4 boot camp stretches that he had been through in order to make it through one time. He was from Arkansas. But he was so damn stupid, it was unreal. He was the type of individual to see, he'd pop up and say, "Ain't we ain't there yet?" I mean, he's a different type of individual. He was basic cannon fodder.
And they wouldn't just kick him out for being ineligible.
No, they just, even though he was too stupid to make it, they'd keep him there till he did make it.
Okay.
And that would be a whole different deal.
How did you get through it?
I asked myself that many times. I don't know. I just, since I was active in everything when I was growing up, well, it wasn't that difficult for me. But some of those guys, like they came back from the hill country in Arkansas or someplace like that, and they didn't have any idea that, they didn't know what it was to sweat.
Okay.
They'd find out, and it'd be after the first 2 or 3 days we were there, well, our jackets and our trousers were just basic white mm-hmm. with sweat. Mm-hmm. And you just, they'd make you wear the same damn clothes till they got tired of putting up with you. And then they'd make you shower every night, but you had to put those same grungy clothes on. And then you would come the weekend or anything like this, you'd worse clothes. You'd be out on a table like this, this concrete table with water spigots, and you'd have your, throw your clothes up there, you'd take your brush, take some soap, get everything all down, and you'd hand wash everything. Underwear, everything. And you rinsed them out real good, hung them out of the line, and had clothespins all around the bill of your cap. And that's how you get your clothes taken care of and everything like that. And that's the way you do everything until you came to what was they called, let's see, I think it was a third phase. That was your final phase, because your 13 weeks broke up into 3 phases. And third phase, that you'd send your clothes in to get them washed. And it was a whole different ballgame now.
Okay.
When they finally got fourth phase or third phase, they moved us out of the Quonset huts you know, the motels, which were concrete sleeping areas. Mm-hmm. And they were nice, real nice. I mean, you spit shined the floors, you did everything by hand. You were on your knees, mm-hmm, cleaning this place up and everything like this. And I smoked at that time, and every night, D.I. would say, smokers get on the road. You grab a cigarette, bust your ass outside, and stand there in line until they told you to light a cigarette. And you'd light your cigarette, smoke that cigarette. You'd field strip it, clean it all up, everything like that. And they never even knew you had been there when you went back inside. It was enough to make you quit smoking.
One
cigarette.
That was all you were allotted for the day?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm. You really wondered whether it was worth it to smoke a cigarette, but at least that's something you could do that they didn't have control of.
Make you go outside for a little.
But you go out there and stand in formation and smoke your cigarette and enjoy life for 15 minutes or so, and then strip it all down, go back in the building and
go to bed.
Go to bed. Unless you had fire watch duty.
What was fire watch duty?
Fire watch duty was, they'd have several individuals out of a platoon would be on guard duty for the entire night. I mean, you'd just be on duty for a couple hours. Mm-hmm. And then you'd go waking up one, this person up or that person, whatever. And they'd get up and you'd go ahead and get some sleep yourself. That's just how that deal went.
I mean, how much sleep did you get?
Not enough. I don't really know. Don't.
But it wasn't 8 hours.
Oh, no. We didn't have any watches, so. Okay. We'd get every bit of sleep that we could. We never knew how much that was going to be. Because you're only guaranteed 1 hour of sleep per night for 24.
For how long?
Oh, for your entire year.
13 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
That would be your entire deal. But if you were lucky, you wouldn't be on guard duty that night, and you'd be able to the whole night sleep. Mm-hmm. Unless you're somebody like me that snored, and I snored big time. And the guy on fire watch duty would come by and shake me up. Roll over, you're snoring. And just the way it went.
So, your 13 weeks, the last part, you knew you were making it when somebody else had to do your laundry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what happened after you graduated from the 13 weeks from boot camp?
Okay, from there, we got, maybe 4 or 5 days off. Mm-hmm. We came back here, came home. Mm-hmm. And we went to our next duty station, which for us was school, mm-hmm, which was at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. And we were down there for 6-7 weeks. And we had to learn what our job was going to be and everything like that, which mine was grunt supply.
What does that mean?
Oh, I was supply man for ground pounders. Grunts. There are
people on foot?
People afoot.
Okay. And the supply person just makes sure they have food and clothes? Or?
No. You supply person, they turn in the requisitions for whatever it is they want, like new clothes, new boots, just anything that you need. Mm-hmm. You can go to the supply person to see if they can requisition this. And you learn all sorts of neat stuff.
Such as?
You learn how to, when you need something, you find out how you can go about getting it, whether it's
proper kosher channels
or not.
Okay.
But it's...
So you horse trade.
Right.
Okay.
You've got to be a good horse trader to make everything work right.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently I did do it right because I got two pair of tourist masks while I was in there.
Two pair of what?
Two meritorious masks.
Oh.
That's kind of an honor, I guess. But I received one in Vietnam, and I received another one in Barstow, California, which was my duty station after I came back from overseas. And
which means that your men had everything they needed. You made sure of it.
Uh-huh. And you learned how to buck the system.
Okay. And then the system gives you meritorious. Okay.
It was fun. I really enjoyed that. I would like to have been able to have done that when I came back stateside, but there's just no way to do that unless you were in business for yourself, doing something like running Auto Supply or Napa Auto Supply,
mm-hmm.
working in Montgomery Ward or Sears or any place like this,
mm-hmm.
if you're in the ordering department on that. Mm-hmm. But you got to learn how to sweet talk these people.
Yes, and give them what they want.
Right. Mm-hmm. 'Cause you might trade a couple of telephones for a new pair of shoes or something like that. You never know what you're going to do.
And you always have trading stock in the
right.
back.
You always do. And if you don't, you'll get some.
Mm-hmm.
And everything works out real good that way.
And you have to know a lot of people.
You bet. That's something you can do if you have ever worked as a horse trader,
mm-hmm.
or anything like that. You find out how to pull a strings.
Librarians do that too.
I don't doubt that a bit.
Because we don't have much.
Right. I understand that. But it isn't long until you figure out, hey, this is worth yay so much.
Mm-hmm.
This is worth yay so much. If I want this, I'll just have to give you yay so much of that.
Mm-hmm.
Make everything work right. And if you make everything work right, eventually you're going to have a place like this that'll take care of you and you'll be able to make things go.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got to know how to play it.
And be nice to everybody.
Right.
See?
You never pull a punch on any of them. You just got to shoot it straight. And it was very interesting for me because, see, they took me. I was I'd heard the meritorious mass in Vietnam, which stepped me up on my pay grades. Like, when you go from E, I was E2 when I got over there, which is PFC. But you go to E3, E4, anything like that, you've got to know how to pull this punch here and pull punch over here and do this for that guy and everything like that. And everything will work out real good. And like, you got to be in there yay so long before you get this promotion or that promotion or anything like that. And if you have everything working right, like when we pulled out of Vietnam, they set us up a 500-man camp at Subic Bay in Philippine Islands, and they got everything ready. The helicopters had mops that they pulled. These were mops that come off out of your bird. You drag them in the water now. And they're electrical. You tie them to a generator and you... It promotes something. Pull these mines in and blow them up.
Oh,
we had to use them in Haiphong Harbor and places like that. And they sent my unit to... Haiphong Harbor to take care of that situation. And in order to do that, they had to keep me in the Philippine Islands to take care of that situation until they called me and said they needed me to bring this up to them personally. And I'm okay, if you say so. Mm-hmm. I had to go get stuff loaded on a helicopter, and we flew up there and got everything given to them, the whole deal, and got an old deal all taken care of. Then flew back to Philippine Islands, and then when they finished that deal in Haiphong Harbor, they sent us to Okinawa at Fatima Air Base, and we set up our helicopter unit there. This helicopter unit, HMM-164, was a composite helicopter unit. We had Cobra helicopters, which we got when we came out of Vietnam. Had Hueys, 46s, and 53s. They shot 50 caliber machine guns off of the 53s. A 50 caliber machine gun is a one bad baby. And M60s on everything else, and except the Cobras. The Cobras had 30 cals. And it was interesting. I mean, for an old farmer kid.
Mm-hmm. You were playing with good toys.
It was I mean, you were playing with toys that you'd only thought about of and saw on TV. Mm-hmm. But you really got to go out and do that. And had 2 chances in 5 of living through the first 3 missions. And that's what they told me the first day I was in that unit. And which I thought sucked, because we did send a lot of people out, never came back with them.
Tell me again how you got in that unit.
They didn't have a grunt supplyman in that unit. And see, the basic Marine Corps individual is a basic rifleman. Mm-hmm. A rifleman is a grunt. Mm-hmm. Walking everywhere. And I didn't like that idea because I don't like to walk. So they put me on a ship in a helicopter unit where they had to fly me everywhere.
Okay. But now you have air and water, and you wanted land.
Yes. And I finally got some.
Okay. Where exactly did you go once you were assigned to the... What is the helicopter unit called?
HMM-164.
HMM-164.
Yeah, Marine Medium Helicopter Squadron 164.
Okay. Where was this one based?
Okay, it was based out of Fatima Air Base, Okinawa. Mm-hmm. But they were TAD to Vietnam. Temporary additional duty to Vietnam.
Okay. When about was this?
Okay, this was in 72. They'd been over there since sometime in the 60s. Mm-hmm. See, they were there for troop lifts, medical evacuations, SAR missions, and I think one SAR mission is all we had when I was there.
What's a SAR?
SAR mission, it's search and rescue.
Okay.
And we were doing that with a B-52 that got shot down over Hanoi. Mm-hmm. Made it back to the drink, and we were running up and down the Gat. Mm-hmm. So they sent us over to pick their survivors up. And that's the size of that deal.
Mm-hmm. So that was your job?
Yeah, when I wasn't in the office. Mm-hmm.
And when you're in the office, you're hustling supplies.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you remember what it was like when you first got to the helicopter unit?
I remember what it was like because I couldn't believe it. I left Kansas in a snowstorm. Got to San Francisco. Some base about there. I can't even remember what base I was on now. And they put us on an aircraft to Okinawa. We flew into Okinawa. That's a long flight because we stopped off in Hawaii and refueled and then went on to Okinawa. And then we picked up orders for 164 LPH-12 USS Inchon, which was offloading off of the USS Okinawa, and they were on the Philippine Islands. We went to Subic Bay, and I came walking out of the air terminal, and there were trees everywhere out there with bananas on them, which just blew my mind. Left a snowstorm to go into a situation they had bananas.
The tropics.
I saw monkeys everywhere. Mm-hmm. Monkeys were just living it up on us. And over the 500 man camp, which we got to stay in after we left Vietnam, we stayed up in the 500 man camp. We'd go get on our 6x to ride back down to work the next day, and we'd have to have somebody go out there and clean all the poop off the back of the 6x, so we'd have a place so we could sit down.
Monkey poop?
Yes.
Okay. It stands to reason.
There's monkeys everywhere. It's the darnest thing I ever saw.
Okay. Your job while you were there then was to be a supply agent?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then what was your other position?
Well, I worked as a aerial door gunner, and that was just an added on exception job with the supply situation, and then worked as supply man till I got out.
Mm-hmm. So you spent about a year and a half in active service?
No, I spent 2 years in active.
Okay. 2 years, and that included your boot camp and all the training. Uh-huh. Okay. Were you put in a combat situation?
Well, I was in combat all the time. I was overseas in Vietnam.
Okay.
In a combat deal.
When you said that only 2 out of 5 survived,
that job. 2 missions out of 5 was the limit. Because that just, let's take it on average.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not a good deal. I remember writing my brother, who was in the Marine Corps at that time, and he went in a couple months after I did. He was going to school to be a helicopter mechanic. And I told him a few of these things. So waste his mind. But he could see why.
Mm-hmm.
It was the way it is.
Do you have a couple memorable experiences you would share?
No, you don't really want to know them.
Okay. You said that you were awarded a couple citations for being a good supply person.
Yes, meritorious masks, both of them.
Mm-hmm.
One in Vietnam and one at Barstow, California.
How did you get them?
Just supplying, getting the supplies they need.
Mm-hmm.
And getting everything ready to go. Like when I was in Vietnam, they brought just duffel bags full of utilities to me. And I had to sort all those, and I'd get, all of them had blood and all that crap on them that had been taken off of wounded individuals and stuff like that. Put those in one, and the others, the stuff that wasn't messed up, you could get them washed and issue them again.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just the way that life was. But then after I came back stateside at Barstow, California, I was worked in a Hawk missile section, which it was, you had to have a very high security clearance to work in here. And apparently the individuals that had been there to get their parts and stuff before for those guys weren't doing a very good job of it. And they'd come in here and give me several of these 1348s order forms for certain deals, and I'd find out how the heck to get them, where I had to go to get them and stuff. And apparently the individual they'd had before had been going and getting them. So I loved, got out of the area, got going.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to get stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
And that made a tremendous difference. And they were all happy. And as long as they were happy, I'd be happy. Because they have, they had pool tables set up there and all this stuff. Just to break monotony. Because those guys were working with such high-tech stuff that they had to get away from the stuff mentally,
mm-hmm.
or they'd just go completely zonkers. And before I was there, I know they had trouble getting their parts and stuff, so they were going zonkers anyway because
they couldn't do their job.
Right, they go play ping pong or shoot a game of pool or just something to calm them down. And I guess I helped them get things done because they were doing a good job.
And people noticed.
Yeah.
Okay. While you were serving, how did you stay in touch with your family?
Write a letter.
Could you call?
I called them. Oh, boy. My folks live 2.5 miles north on a farm, and I called them from Singapore. We went there for Christmas, 72, and I was with 6 or 7 other guys. We all got together and pooled our money and rented a motel room suite area up in this Singapore Hyatt, and I called my folks, collect. And that gave me a charge. And my mom was working for Stock Growers Bank. And the guy that was there was, I think Tom Breyer was his name, and he was had done quite a bit for the service while he was in there. He was a officer of some type, and so Bob Hope put on his last Christmas show in Singapore. I can't remember what the name of the ship was that we had that it was on. All these honeys were running around there and everything like that, and it was very interesting. Very interesting. Most of us were drunk enough that we didn't know what was going on anyway, but we had a lot of fun. I was watched on TV a couple of times. They were showing Subic Bay in the Philippine Islands, and I can remember that we'd be in there drunk or an all get out, and it's under martial law, so it's 12 o'clock midnight, you'd better be on the base or you're in a world of trouble. And you'd have to wade through the mud, about ankle deep in mud, all the way down to the Shit River, and little kids, 5, 6 years old, and they're swimming in this, what we called Shit River, and you'd throw money over the rail of the bridge, and these kids would be swimming down in the bottom of that deal, getting those money, that money and everything. You couldn't believe it. People live like that, and I don't know what they do now. It wasn't quite the same place when I saw it on TV here a couple, 2 or 3 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. It's a whole different ballgame. They blacktopped the main stretch and everything, and it was all mud when I was there.
Yeah.
But it was...
What was the food like?
That was all right. That Philippine Islands was the first place I ever had a BLT at. I didn't know what they were. And I asked the old kid I was with, what the heck's a BLT? Oh, bacon, lettuce, tomato. I said, well, sounds good. He said, well, let's eat one. He got one, I got one. My gosh, they were great. I mean, and you paid for them in pesos and got to make the big currency change and all this noise. And then you'd have monkey on a stick, barbecued.
There were enough of them to spare.
Oh, God. My OIC officer in charge, Mickey Bradley, he was the first lieutenant, had these air crew bars and the whole deal. He'd fly as a door gunner, and he was the first lieutenant. Now, all the rest of us were just peons, like privates and stuff like that. But he was an officer, an old deal. He'd get up there riding behind a machine gun. And Mickey Bradley, I saw him in 1975. He called me from Liberal. That's a Thunderbird motel. He called me. So I drove out there as fast as I could, see him and everything. We went to several bars and did a little bit of drinking, messing around. And he was a forest ranger. That's what he did when he was civilian life, but he wanted to go back to Marine Corps life, so he got a divorce and went back. And his wife had had him all that crap she was going to put up with since he was never there. So he and his sister were heading east, and he was going to go back to Washington, D.C. for report in and do something. I don't know whatever happened to him. He was quite the guy. I almost brought my book with me, but I decided that there's too much crap in there that didn't involve Vietnam, so I put it back down and decided to leave it set.
We can copy things that are about Vietnam and leave the rest.
No, it's nothing really.
Okay. And if you have pictures that you might like to share.
No, nothing. The pictures I've got, a lot of pictures of Okinawa and stuff like that. But, I mean, that's nothing that would interest anybody or anything like that. I never really knew how difficult the fight for Okinawa was in World War II. Mm-hmm. And Raymond Lunsford lived out at Acres. Mm-hmm. He used to come out there to the cemetery when I was running the cemetery. He'd come out there and we'd get talking. He's with the 5th Marines when they took Okinawa. Mm-hmm. And he said, "You would never believe it. You'd never know." I said, "Well, I was there." But this was 30 years after the war. And I said, "I can only imagine the destruction that you guys must have had." And he said, "Well, we lost something like 50,000 men just going on Okinawa." It was interesting. I really enjoyed talking to him about that. And you probably didn't know him, Gurney Winkleplack. He used to live down here, south end of Maine, right south of Bob Feller's. There's a yellow house. He and his wife lived there till they died. And Gurney Winkleplack was, everybody knew him as Wink. And he'd talk about different things that he had to do in World War II. And he was a Marine in World War II, and he just, I'm glad I didn't get in there when they were doing all that landing stuff. I wouldn't have been a very good Marine.
I don't think it was ever easy. The next question is, did you have plenty of supplies? Well, you did if you got them.
Yeah.
Okay. What caused you pressure? What caused you stress while you were there?
Oh. Just not knowing whether I could get parts that I was needing for troops, everything like this, because at night we could go up on the flight deck and take a jug of scotch with us and get on helicopters, look through the windows and see the arc raids over Hanoi. And we'd watch them drink another fifth of scotch and go back down to quarters and usually just get in bed, go to sleep. But that's how we'd get rid of the stress. Just take another drink.
How did you get liquor?
Well, you gotta go with your mail.
Who would mail it to you?
No. Like, you fly into different bases mm-hmm. to get your mail. Mm-hmm. And
you just go.
Go by the club. Get your jug. And if you weren't going in that day, you might be able to find out who the pilots were and stuff. And maybe buy them a jug while they get a jug. And
use your special skills.
Right. You learn your way of doing things.
Was there anything special you did for good luck?
Open my eyes every morning. That's the only thing I can do.
Okay. You have talked about people entertaining themselves by playing paddleball, ping pong, pool. Just something to take your mind off your job, which is really stressful, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was there anything else? You mentioned Bob Hope, which was really special.
Yeah, Bob Hope. You're 12 years younger than I am. And you may have lost the Bob Hope may not was he a oh. big deal for you guys?
No, but I knew about him because he was in movies. But I don't seems like he did Christmas specials.
Yeah. USO shows.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. And his last Vietnam one, I saw it
mm-hmm.
at Singapore. And that's the only one I saw.
There were others.
Oh, he did it every year. But mm-hmm. That's... I saw the ones that were here in the States, but I never really thought that much about them.
Mm-hmm.
But after I got there, I changed my mind quite a bit.
Who were some of the people he had with him? Because he had great entertainers.
Oh, fantastic. And Margaret was with him, I think. I really couldn't tell you. Mm-hmm. Joey, can't think of her name. That was a good looking little gal. Of course, then I was a young Marine, so.
You noticed those.
You darn right you noticed those.
Okay. The next one is, what did you do when on leave? Besides rent 5-star hotel suites.
And drink.
Is that it?
Sometimes.
Okay.
We went to the State Fair, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
When I was on Okinawa, we'd... there were several riots.
Who? Who was rioting?
You wouldn't know anything about
that. I didn't know. What kind of riots?
Let me... the kind of racial riots.
Okay. Where?
Oh, on Okinawa.
Okay.
Oh, my God. Well, those, you know, the blacks would all get together, and so they'd have riots against Okinawans and
okay.
individuals like that there on Okinawa and right there top of the hill coming up into Fatima Air Base. Well, you could look down through there and see the highway ran down through there, and it'd be covered with lots of black people having fights and stuff, doing all their riot and crap. And those Okinawa police, they didn't care about anything. And they just, they get on their microphone and say, "Hey, you guys, welcome to Kent State." They just level their weapons down.
Were these American servicemen?
Oh, yeah.
And that was okay?
It was on Okinawa country.
Okay.
So they'd better respect the Okinawa laws, or they can get the bat shot off.
I had never heard of this.
Well, this has happened. I tell you, I was over in the E Club. Oh, this happened several times. And these blacks would want to be starting a riot and stuff like that in there. And you'd sit over there and take your drink and sit back on your chair. And MPs would come through the door and the blacks had all been beaten out the other door over here, heading out, getting out of there. Mm-hmm. And these MPs had run over there to the deal and, boom, halt. And they'd shoot first, and then they'd say, halt. That crap got shut down very fast because these guys were that way. They just wouldn't put up with that crap.
Okay.
It tends to cut down on your riding individuals.
Thins them out.
Yeah.
But like your commanding officers wouldn't put a stop to it before they lost people in their...
Oh, I kind of imagine the commanding officers just thought, well, that's just something that happens. Because I tell you this, the fighting and crap that's going on around up in the United States.
Could be stopped.
Yeah, but there wasn't anybody going to stop it because they didn't know how to. But these old boys over there, they do. They do knew how to shut it down and immediately. You may kill 3 or 4 dozen of these individuals, but
stop.
They stop.
Okay. Did Walter Cronkite ever mention this?
No, I don't think he did. I don't know.
Okay. Well.
Walter Cronkite just used to blow my mind.
Why?
Well, he was like the god of TV.
Yes. We believed him.
No, I know it. I know it. Boy, if I got off work, say at 5:45 or anything like this, and I'd fog at home just as fast as I could, turn the TV on, catch the last of Walter Cronkite, because he always ran from 5:30 to 6.
Yes.
And he was interesting.
Was he telling the truth as you saw it?
As I saw it, yes.
Okay.
But his version of truth is a little sideways at times, I think.
You want to get specific?
No, I don't know.
Okay, because he was the voice.
Yes, he was the man that knew.
Yeah.
And he made it interesting. You didn't like to hear it, but that was fact. Mm-hmm. And just had to be able to pull your bridges up and stand up to it. But that's the way life was at that time. You realize that was 50 years ago? 51 years ago, to be exact.
Yeah. Things have changed.
Yeah, you were like, what, 6, 7 years old?
Yes. And my mama turned off the TV when it came on.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. She didn't want to hear it. It's okay. I didn't. Yeah. But I didn't. So some of this is very new to me.
Yeah.
And it probably some of this wasn't on TV anyway.
Oh, yeah. Well,
yeah.
They've all got their norms that have to be lived up to. You can't put on everything. But there's...
And things you don't want the kiddos seeing.
Right. Well...
Yeah.
No, you don't, but yet... My first wife had 3 kids when we got married, and they'd been protected. They weren't allowed to see this stuff, even though she was from Barstow. You had to be ready, because that place, there's Marine Corps stuff everywhere, and... That was just part of life.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's a life a lot of us didn't know anything about.
I know, but...
Yeah. You've told me a couple things that in modern ears sound kind of heinous, that you would just shoot people who are running away. And I get it, okay? I think the racial tensions were, I wanted to say worse than now, but now that I think about all the riots going on during COVID, maybe nothing's changed.
Well, this deal, I think COVID's crock bull anyway.
Yes. But I can't change it.
I know that. I know nobody can change what was done to us. But the individual that's up in the White House thinks he knows best, so.
I voted for him.
That's the only direction I'm going to go. Nice. Yeah.
Okay. Did anything happen that was funny while all this was going on?
Like what?
Okay. It sounds as though you're under a lot of pressure, and you deal with it by drinking when you have time off. And I'm assuming you had to be stone cold sober before you went back on duty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Did anything happen with the people you were working with that was just funny?
Nothing.
Okay. It just wasn't. Nothing was funny. I got you. What did you think of any of your officers or people you were with, fellow soldiers?
I thought some of the officers, when I was in the helicopter unit in Vietnam, why those guys got more than I'll ever think about having. Those pilots are something different now.
Yeah.
Go down into an LZ, and you go into an LZ, that's a hot LZ. My gosh, that's a difficult situation to be dropping your bird into. But they'd do it anyway. They're just counting on the door gunners to take care of things, trying to work things out. Which you couldn't do sometimes, but you could work at it. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting.
Tell me what LZ means.
Landing zone.
Oh. So there weren't any safe landing zones.
Oh, yeah, there were safe landing zones, but not very often. Usually it's a hot LZ. And a hot LZ, they're shooting at you.
Yeah. Okay.
About them, but usually you don't have to worry about them too much unless you're going in for a medevac or something like that. Mm-hmm. You got a medevac, sometimes you got to run into a hot LZ. Mm-hmm.
So you did this numerous times?
I don't know.
Okay. Did you keep a diary?
No. Well,
okay.
I don't.
Don't want to think.
I've told you more than I told my mother.
Okay.
So that's, you know, it was about.
Yeah. Do you recall the day your service was over?
Oh, yeah. When I got out, my gosh. I went out, I reported in over there at the Nebo area where our where the work area was, and they came to me and said, "You have to be ready there for a formation." And I said, "Okay." So I went into an air formation, and they awarded me my second meritorious mast, and that was the size of it. And there I just went to the tequila, and they poured me on the train that night. 24 hours later, they poured me off the train in Garden City, and my parents picked me up there. I was drunk and a skunk. And my mother was very mad. And my dad said, "Been there, done that, know exactly what your problem is." I wish I had never gotten out till I retired. good income.
Yeah.
So, but I had spent 26 years with the city to get an income. When you pair it with the Social Security, you've got a nice income. But if you don't have one, you don't. The other one ain't going to do you any good.
Yeah.
I see my brother, Kenny. He's 2 years older than I am, and Daddy's gone. He isn't getting to work doing things he enjoys doing. He's doing them because he has to work. Mm-hmm. Me, I do things I want to do. I don't. And I just work out here for Carlin Degnan. Mm-hmm. Go out there and I can get a horseback and go riding around. Whenever she needs anything done, well, she just gives me a call and I'll take care of it. That all started when I was out mowing out here at the old Duval place, 12-mile corner, and Richard Degnan called me the weekend before he passed away, and he said, they said, I'm not going to be coming out of here, so I'm needing somebody to take my place at do everything out there for Carlin. And I said, okay. So that's where I'm at. And when she needs somebody, she just hollers and away I go.
So you get to be horseback?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Not very often, but I get a chance to anywhere. I'll enjoy being horseback. Get out there and cover some country, just messing around.
Yes. So your retirement is enjoyable.
Yeah, right. I enjoy my retirement. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very poor retirement from the city, but paired up with very poor Social Security, and you've got a livable situation.
Mm-hmm. You said your parents went to get you. They brought you back here?
Oh, no, they live in a liberal.
Okay.
So they took me out there, and then Dad used Mom's car, and I borrowed his pickup and came. Come back over here.
Mm-hmm. What was it like when you just got out of the service?
Oh, nothing really different. It just, I'd done it cowboying so doggone long. I knew what the heck to do anyway, so it just a matter of going out in that building fence or taking care of cattle or.
So you slipped back in the groove?
Oh, yeah. They were no big deal. I know there's a lot of those guys couldn't do it, but it wasn't anything for me.
Were you interested in going back to school after you got back?
No, not really. But then after I had a tree fall on me in 76, I thought going to school and using my GI Bill to make a living would be about what I had to do, so.
So you went back to school to do what?
Feedlot technology is what I was going to school out of Garden City.
What does that mean?
Well, you learn all the different things that go on in a feedlot. Like taking care of cattle, next feed, scoop bunks out, you name it, things like this.
Okay.
And
which feedlot did you work at?
Oh, I worked for a couple of them. So I worked for Masters 2, south of Garden City. Mm-hmm. I rode pins for them. Mm-hmm. And I worked for Old Santa Fe Feeders. Used to be up north of Sublette, 5 miles. Mm-hmm. You have an intersection and northwest quadrant of that center intersection. They had a real nice feedlot built up there. It's mm-hmm. not there now. There's, you can't even see anything was there. And then Bobby Seacat, I used to work out there with him when I was in high school every now and then. And it was just something new.
Okay. But you liked it.
Oh, yeah. Well, we didn't really enjoy it that much, but you could make a living. Mm-hmm. So I cowboyed out in the open grass is so much better any way you look at it.
Yes. Smells better, too.
Yes.
Did you make any close friends in the service?
Oh, yes. Like, I had to go over in 75, see my OIC, Mickey Bradley. And then in 75, probably a week or two after that, after I saw Mickey, an old boy by the name of G.W. Blair down at Texas, he come driving in out to Harper headquarters, and he came up and stayed a couple nights with me. We drank a lot of beer and had good friends, and then the friends got over there in Liberal. Let's see, out of the three friends I had over there, two of them, let's see, one of them is alive. Mm-hmm. The other two were killed already, but after they came back, but, Gary Carpenter, now he called me down at the ranch one night. It's in January of 76. Called me up and he said, "What are you doing?" I told him what I was doing and asked me where I lived at and the whole deal. And he said, "Would it be okay if my wife and I came down and see you?" I said, "Yeah, come on down." He said, "Well, it's gone far over there." And I said, "Yeah, weren't you guys planning on spending the night and everything like that?" And I had 4 bedrooms at that house where we lived down there, so I wasn't worried about that. And I just told him, I asked him, I said, "Do I need to go to town and buy the beer, or are you going to pick it up when you come through?" He said, "Oh, I'll pick it up as I come through." Never did show up, never showed up. So I didn't have any beer drink that night. But my mother called me the next morning. She was still living at Liberal. And she said, "I got to read you an article that's in the paper this morning." And it was an article about Gary Carpenter. Got his head blown off. So there's no doubt in my mind he was so wound up after he talked to me on the phone that he went playing games and got his head blown off. I never had seen his wife, talked to her or anything like that. And I've thought about it several times, just going out there to see if I can find her, but I did drive out there one time when I was still working for the city. Janet Floyd married Randy Thompson. Both of them graduated from high school here, and I asked them if they knew where he was buried. And Randy, from Liberal originally, and he told me where he thought he was buried at, and so I went out there to see. I took the day off and went. I drove out there and found a place where he's at and everything. He and I were good friends, real good friends. One of those deals. happens.
That's hard. Did you join the VA?
Oh, yeah. I've been a member. See, that's been kind of a weird deal. See, I started blowing taps for them when I was in high school,
mm-hmm.
freshman in high school. And so I just kept blowing for them. Every time they'd call me, I'd run in here and blow taps for them. And then when I got out of the Marine Corps, come back from Vietnam, well, I could join.
Mm-hmm.
And the Vietnam veterans were not regarded as a, since Vietnam was not a declared war, is
yeah,
is not a good situation. So I'm not an active member anymore, but I used to be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did your military experience make you change your thinking about war?
No, not really.
Okay. Do you attend any reunions?
No, and I won't. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's going to a reunion, I would compare it to coming down here to give you this interview.
Okay. Once is enough.
Yep.
In retrospect, how do you feel about serving in Vietnam?
I'd be very tempted to go to Canada.
Yes.
Because what did we gain? We didn't gain a damn thing.
Yeah. Is there anything you would like to mention that I haven't asked you? Anything you want people to know about this time?
I want everybody to know that this damn defoliant crap, Agent Orange, crap like that, something that should never be used anywhere by anyone, because that has ruined so many lives. Like Raylene's brother, Gary, at Lakin, or right north of Lake McKinney. I don't know if you ever knew where Lake McKinney was. It was between Deerfield and Lake.
Mm-hmm.
But he lives right straight north of it, about, 300 yards, maybe a quarter mile. I think he probably is fighting with this Agent Orange crap like everybody else is. And it's Doug Roberts, him having to do it and everything like that. And I just never knew how many individuals were eaten up by this stuff. And I just happened to make a comment to Doug Roberts one day down here at the welding shop, and he's fighting with the same darn thing I am. And like Warren Eisenbart, he was a real good guy, but alcohol got him eaten up.
Too many people we know have cancer now.
Yeah. One of those deals.
Yeah. What whether it was worth it or not.
Well, I didn't think I would make it to 50 years old. I'll be 71 years old here in a month from today. I'll be 71 years old. And so I've lived a lot longer than I thought I would. So.
And you are cancer-free and healthy now.
Yeah, near as I can tell, because they took... Zuni called me and said, you are cancer-free. Mm-hmm. And they x-rayed my lungs and everything. And my lungs, I figured they'd be shot because I smoke. Mm-hmm. But he said I'm good, so.
Okay.
Just drink as much beer as I can and have fun.
Stay horseback.
Yeah, I'd love to get out of horseback.
I know.
Oh, I sold a saddle in 80 after I got back from getting my back operated on. And because Zacharias told me there'd be no more horseback riding or anything like that. So I sold my saddle as soon as I got back. If I wouldn't have, I'd still have it. Get to get out, ride. Oh, that'd be so nice.
Sir, thank you for your service.
You're entirely welcome.